Chapter 27. Cerberus Hades, Delta Pavonis Heliopause, 2566. The black icons of the cache weapons swarmed towards their firing points, their terrible potency waiting to be unleashed against Cerberus. In all that time there had been no response from the world, no hint that it was anything other than what it appeared to be. It just hung there, grey and sutured, like the cranium of a skull tipped in prayer. When, finally, the moment came, there was only a soft chime from the projection sphere, and the numerals briefly cycled through zero, before commencing the long count upwards. Sylvestre was the first to speak. He turned to Volyova, who had made no visible movement in minutes. "Isn't something supposed to have happened? Aren't your damned weapons supposed to have gone off?" Volyova looked up from the bracelet readout, which was consuming her attention, like someone snapping out of a trance. "I never gave the order," she said, so softly that it took conscious effort to hear her words. "I never told the weapons to fire." "Pardon?" Sojaki said. "You heard what I said," she answered, with mounting volume. "I didn't do it." Once again, Sojaki's resolute calm managed to seem more threatening than any histrionics. "There are a number of minutes remaining in which the attack may yet be made," he said. "Perhaps you had best consider utilizing them before the situation becomes irretrievable." "I think," Sylvestre said, "that the situation did so some time ago."
"That's a matter for the triumvirate," Agassi said, his steel-clad knuckles glinting on the edge of his seat rests. "Ilya, if you give the order now, maybe we can—"
"I'm not about to," she said. "Call it mutiny if you wish, or treason, I don't care. But my involvement in this madness ends here."
She looked at Sylvestre with unexpected bile.
"You know my reasons, so don't pretend otherwise."
"She's right, then."
Now it was Pascal who had joined the conversation, and for a moment she had all their attention.
"You know what she's been saying is true. How we just can't take this risk, no matter how much you want it."
"You've been listening to Curie as well," Sylvestre said.
Although the news that his wife had gone over to Volyova's side was hardly surprising, drawing less bitterness than he might have expected. Aware of the perversity of his feelings, he nonetheless rather admired her for doing it.
"She knows things that we don't," Pascal said.
"What the hell does Curie have to do with any of this?"
Hegazi asked, glancing peevishly towards Sojaki.
"She's just a grunt. Can we omit her from the discussion?"
"Unfortunately not," Volyova said.
"Everything that you've heard is true, and carrying on with this really would be the worst mistake any of us have ever made."
Sojaki veered his seat away from Hegazi, approaching Volyova.
"If you aren't going to give the attack order, at least surrender control of the cache to me."
And he reached out his hand, beckoning her to unclasp the bracelet and pass it to him.
"I think you should do what he says," Hegazi said. "It could be very unpleasant for you otherwise."
"I don't doubt that for a moment,"
Volyova said, and with one deft motion, she snapped the bracelet from her hand.
"It's completely useless to you, Sojaki. The cache will only listen to me or Curie."
"Give me the bracelet. You'll regret it. I'm warning you."
She passed it to him all the same. Sojaki grasped it as if it were a valuable gold amulet, toying with it briefly before locking it around his wrist. He watched as the little display reignited, filling with the same schematic data which had flashed from Volyova's wrist a moment earlier.
"This is Triumvir Sojaki," he said,
licking his lips between each word, savoring the power.
"I'm not sure of the precise protocol required at this point, so I ask for your cooperation, but I want the 6 deployed cache weapons to commence."
Sojaki stopped mid-sentence. He looked down at his wrist, at first in puzzlement, and then, moments later, in something much closer to fear.
"You sly old dog," Hegazi said wonderingly. "I imagined you might have a trick up your sleeve, but I never thought you'd have one literally."
"I'm a very literal-minded person," Volyova said.
Sojaki's face was a rigid mask of pain now, and the constricting bracelet had visibly cut into his wrist.
His hand was locked open, now as white and bloodless as wax. With his free hand he was making a valiant effort to claw the bracelet free, but it was futile. She had seen to that. The clasp would have sealed shut now, and what remained was only a painful and slow process of constrictive amputation, as the memory plastic polymer chains in the bracelet slithered ever tighter. The bracelet had known, from the instant he placed it around his wrist, that his DNA was not correct, that it failed to match her own. But it had not begun to constrict until he had tried to issue an order, which, she supposed, was a kind of leniency on her behalf.
"Make it stop," he managed to say. "Make it stop. You fucking bitch. Please."
Volyova estimated he had 1 to 2 minutes before the bracelet had his hand off, 1 to 2 minutes before the main sound in the room would be the cracking of bone, assuming it was audible above Sajaki's whimpers.
"Your manners let you down," she said. "What kind of a way to ask is that? You'd think now would be the one time when you had some courtesy to spare."
"Stop it," Pascal said. "I'm begging you, please. Whatever's happened, it isn't worth this."
Volyova shrugged and addressed herself to Hegazi.
"You may as well remove it, Triumvir, before it gets too messy. I'm sure you have the means."
Hegazi held one of his own steel hands up for inspection, as if having to reassure himself that they were no longer flesh.
"Now," Sajaki shrieked, "get it off me!"
Hegazi positioned his seat next to the other Triumvir and set to work. It was a process which seemed to cause Sajaki fractionally more pain than the constriction itself. Sylvest said nothing. Hegazi worked the bracelet free. His metal hands were lathered with human blood by the time he was done. What remained of the bracelet fell from his fingers, dropping to the floor 20 meters below. Sajaki, who had not stopped moaning, looked with revulsion at the damage that had been wrought to his wrist. His hand was still attached, but the bones and tendons were hideously exposed, blood pulsing out in red gouts, cascading in a thin scarlet rope to the distant floor. Trying to stifle the loss, he pressed the agonized limb against his belly. Finally he ceased to make any sound, and after long moments his blanched face turned to Volyova and spoke.
"You'll pay for this," he said. "I swear it."
Which was when Curry entered the bridge and began shooting. Of course, she had always had a plan in mind, even if it was not a very detailed one, and when Curry had taken her first step into the chamber and seen the cataract of what was obviously blood, she had not taken the time to run her plan through a set of elaborate last-minute revisions. Instead, she had decided to start shooting the ceiling until she had everyone's attention. It had not taken very long. Her weapon of choice was the plasma rifle, set to its lowest possible yield, with the rapid-fire mode disengaged so that she had to squeeze the trigger for each pulse. The first one bit a meter-wide crater into the ceiling, causing the cladding to rain down in jagged, heat-scorched shards. Wary of blasting right through, she directed her next pulse a little to the left, and then a little to the right. One of the shards crashed onto the glowing sphere of the hollow display, and for an eye blink, the sphere flickered and warped before resuming stability. Then, because she had rather comprehensively announced her presence, she powered down the gun and slung it back over her shoulder. Volyova, who had obviously anticipated her next move, jetted her seat down towards Curry, and when they were barely 5 meters apart, Curry threw her one of the lightweight guns, the needle projectors she had found on the archive's wall.
"Take this for Pascal," she said,
throwing the low-yield beamer after it. Volyova caught both weapons expertly and quickly passed Pascal her own. Curry, who had by now assimilated the situation, observed that the rain of blood, which had now ceased, had originated from Sajaki. He looked in a bad way, cradling one arm as if it was broken or as if he had taken a hit.
"Ilya," Curry said, "you started all the fun without me. I'm disappointed."
"Events rather demanded it," Volyova said.
Curry looked at the display, trying to figure out what had happened beyond the ship.
"Did the Weps fire?"
"No, I never gave the order."
"And now she can't," Sylvest said, "because Hegazi just destroyed her bracelet."
"Does that mean he's on our side?"
"No,"
Valjova said. It just means he can't stand the sight of blood, especially when it's Sajaki's.
He needs help, Pascal said. For God's sake, you can't just let him bleed to death.
He won't, Valjova said. He's chimeric, like Hegazi, just not so obviously. Already the medicines in his blood will be initiating cellular repair at a vastly accelerated rate. Even if the bracelet had taken his hand off, he'd have grown another one. Isn't that right, Sajaki?
He looked at her with a face so drained of strength that it looked as if he'd have trouble growing a new fingernail, let alone a new hand. But eventually he nodded.
Someone should still help me to the infirmary. There's nothing magical about my medicines. They have their limitations, and my pain receptors are alive and well. Trust me.
He's right, Hegazi said. You shouldn't overestimate the capabilities of his shins. Do you want him dead or not? You'd better decide now. I can help him to the infirmary.
And stop off for a browse at the Warcave on the way?
Valjova shook her head.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Then me, Sylvest said. I'll take him. You trust me that far, don't you?
I trust you about as far as I could piss you, Svinoy, Valjova said. But on the other hand, you wouldn't know what to do at the Warcave even if you got there. And Sajaki isn't in a fit state to give you any particularly cogent suggestions.
Is that a yes?
Be quick about it, then.
Valjova emphasized the point with a stab of the needler, her finger tense on the trigger.
If you aren't back here in 10 minutes, I'm sending Kuri after you.
In a minute, the two men had left. Sajaki slumped on Sylvest, barely capable of walking without support from the other man. Kuri wondered if Sajaki would still be conscious by the time he was brought to the infirmary, and found that she did not particularly care.
About the Warcave, she said. I don't think you have to worry too much about anyone else using it. I shot the fucking place to bits as soon as I had what I wanted.
Valjova mulled on that and then nodded appreciatively.
That was sound tactical thinking, Kuri.
Tactics don't come into it. It was that persona running the place. I just decided to open up and torch the bastard.
Pascal said,
Does this mean we've won? I mean, have we actually achieved what we set out to do?
Guess so, Kuri said. Sajaki's out of the picture, and I don't think our friend Hegazi is going to make too much trouble for himself. And it doesn't look like your husband is going to keep his word about killing us all if he doesn't get what he wants.
A very disappointing, Hegazi said.
I told you, Pascal said. He was always bluffing. That's it then? We can still call off those weapons, can't we?
She was looking at Valjova, who nodded instantly.
Of course.
And then she reached in her jacket and snapped a new bracelet around her wrist, as if it were the most natural thing in the world.
You think I'd be so foolish as not to carry a spare with me?
Not you, Ilya, Kuri said.
She raised the bracelet to her mouth and spoke into it, a mantra-like sequence of commands designed to bypass various levels of security. Finally, when everyone's attention was on the armillary, she said,
All cash weapons return to ship. Repeat, all cash weapons return to ship.
But nothing happened. Not even when enough seconds had elapsed for the expected light-traveled time lag. Nothing, that is, except that the icons representing the cash weapons changed from black to red and began to flash with evil regularity.
Ilya, Kuri said, what does that actually mean?
It means they're arming up and preparing to fire, she said very evenly, as if barely surprised. It means that something very bad is about to happen.